a number of reasons. This session, we're not going to be moving forward with pursuing the passage of House Bill 441.
That's right. House Speaker Brad Wilson says tax reform is not happening this session.
Welcome back to 45 Days, KUER's weekly legislative recap. I'm Nicole Nixon.
And I'm Julia Ritchie. It is day 39 of the Utah legislative session.
That means there are only 6 days left.
Yes, we are almost done, Nicole.
We're in single digits. We'll be done by next week.
So we need to dive into a lot that happened this week. And we know we're at that point in the session where things might change even after we record. So we just want to put that out there as well as a small disclaimer.
FYI, everybody.
But let's start with taxes, because as you may have heard by now, Republican leaders announced Thursday afternoon that they are not going to be pursuing a massive tax reform package this session.
Yeah, and this all happened very fast. So here's Representative Tim Quinn, who was sponsoring the bill on Thursday at about 12:30, just a couple hours before the House was expected to vote on the bill.
How tight of a vote is this going to be?
We have a margin.
Okay.
We have a significant margin.
And here's Representative Tim Quinn at a press conference a mere 3 hours later.
This has been a process. And for me, it's been a process that has been educational.
A much more humble tone from Quinn there as he stood next to Republican leaders and Governor Herbert to announce that they will instead be pushing tax reform in the interim.
So let's step back and remind our listeners exactly what this tax reform package was supposed to do. Republican leaders were worried about our general fund, which is funded by the sales tax. Sales tax base has been shrinking over the last few decades because our economy has been shifting from goods to services. So their idea was, let's just tax a lot of new services, haircuts, lawn care, real estate,
lawyers, health insurance,
Netflix, that kind of stuff.
Yes.
While lowering the overall rate.
From 4.75% to about 3%.
Right. And then they were also going to couple that with an income tax cut from 4.95 to 4.75. I don't think we need to get into this very much because they're not going to do it right now. But essentially, it was a way to rebalance the tax structure. That's what they were really going
Keep
for.
Keep it more stable.
Exactly. But as expected, when Representative Quinn came out with this bill, which was only about a week ago, you know, the first public hearing, they only allowed 45 minutes for public comment. Most of that public comment was overwhelmingly negative. A lot of businesses,
local businesses, huge industries like oil and gas, healthcare, a lot of concern about new taxes and how it would affect business and families. We had a press conference this week, too, where small business owners were talking about how negatively it might affect their businesses and their families. So a lot of public pushback on this bill from the get-go. And it came out 2 weeks before the end of the session, which doesn't allow for a lot of, you know, open debate, public feedback in hearings. And I know leaders on both sides had said that they wanted that. So the clock really started to run out this week.
So one interesting sort of U-turn came from the Salt Lake Chamber, which was one of the few groups that actually spoke in favor of the bill during its first public hearing. But even on Thursday afternoon, the chamber's Abby Osborne stood up and said that their members would also like some more time to look at this proposal.
It was a huge bill, 300 pages, a lot of, you know, a really big policy change that could have major impacts.
Exactly. Here's Abby Osborne talking about that.
We recognize that a policy change of this magnitude requires a robust public process.
So the real question here is, did Republican leaders cave to public pressure, or was it really a timing issue?
I think it might have been a little bit of both for them. And Governor Gary Herbert was asked about that. Did you cave? And here's what he said.
I don't think we caved to anything. I think we responded to what the public understands and wants to do. We've, in fact, incorporated many of the things that the public has asked us to do and consider. And caving is such a pejorative word. Responding to needs and concerns out there, particularly with the limited time that we have, is what we're doing.
So Governor Herbert said he still wants the legislature to work on tax reform, just not in the next week. And he wants to call a special session this summer, have them work on it for a couple months, iron it out, get everyone feeling good about it, and then pass something maybe this summer. He does still want to include a tax cut.
Remember, they promised
$200
to $225 million But now they're going to push that off a little bit too because they want to do the tax.
They want to do them at the same time.
Yeah. So they want to reform the tax code. And then if they can give a tax cut, they will.
Yes.
But that wasn't even the most controversial, weird flip-flopping thing that happened on the Hill this week, right?
There was a lot of flip-flopping on the Hill this week, controversial stuff. So let's talk about this conversion therapy bill. So this got a lot of attention early on in the session. It was this long-awaited bill, and we talked a little bit about it. It had two committee hearings, and there was a lot of public comment, very emotional from both sides. You had people who had undergone conversion therapy and talked a lot about how they felt, how negatively it impacted them and how they felt suicidal afterward.
Mm-hmm.
You also heard from a man who said he had undergone conversion therapy and it worked on him, and he was in a heterosexual marriage now and very happy. And you heard from conversion therapists who defended it and said they want to keep doing it for patients who want it. And the bill ended up being sort of hijacked by Representative Carrie Ann Lisenby, who is the chair of the House Judiciary Committee. The committee adopted a substitute from her that the sponsor, Representative Craig Hull, said he was very uncomfortable with and basically said, this completely undoes the bill. I can't support this anymore. I'm killing this bill.
And, you know, you don't see that too often. A lot of times when another representative introduces a substitute or an amendment to a bill, they've talked about it with mm-hmm. the bill sponsor. The bill sponsor says, okay, it's a friendly amendment.
I'll resist the amendment. And that will give sort of an indication of how mm-hmm. people should vote on it.
It seemed to do something completely different, which is that it created this huge rift, mm-hmm. not just between Representative Lisenby and Representative Hall, but it's roped in the governor because mm-hmm. Lisenby said that she had the support of the governor during the hearing. And that, I think, took a lot of people by surprise because not a week before he had called the practice.
Just a few days before he had called it barbaric and said
right.
that he signaled that he would support Hall's bill. So a lot of fallout from this. Immediately after this bill passed, Troy Williams, who's executive director of Equality Utah LGBTQ rights group, called this press conference, and he and another member of the governor's suicide prevention task force, Taryn Hyatt, announced that they were both resigning in protest, that this bill had been changed so much and basically would keep conversion therapy in state law and protected portions of it. So
that was the big objection, right? We should explain that.
Yeah.
So Craig Hall's bill was very direct about banning conversion therapy for minors.
Mm-hmm.
Lisenby's substitute allowed that to continue as long as it didn't physically or emotionally harm the minor or didn't promise that it could
right.
cure.
And they also took out the words gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have allowed conversion therapy if you wanted to change your gender identity, which I think was a big, big red flag for a lot of
which
people.
Which Hall and Troy Williams says will not effectively do anything,
yeah.
right? And so the issue now is what happens next. We know the bill will not
go forward.
But on Twitter, at least, we're seeing, longtime LGBT allies like Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox has been catching heat for
mm-hmm.
not speaking up more publicly about what happened. And he says that he's committed to continuing to work on the issue in the interim. Everything goes to interim, I guess.
Yeah.
And try to come back maybe next year mm-hmm. With a revamped bill that could actually pass. Because that's, at the end of the day, what happened is Lisenby and other members of the Republican, I guess, Judiciary Committee were not going to pass out Hall's bill as it was.
Right. And this is something, and we see this on a lot of issues, it might take years to,
mm-hmm.
you know, tweak a thing here and there and talk to people over and over to finally bring them on board before it will get through.
That's a great segue to another bill that had a much better outcome this week, which was the hate crimes bill,
mm-hmm.
which we've talked about a little bit. That is a bill to strengthen the state's hate crime statute so that it could actually be enforced
mm-hmm.
For a person convicted of targeting an individual based on some identifying factor like their race or ethnicity or religion.
Right.
And that's a bill that had been talked about in the past.
Years. I think every year I've been on the Hill almost. It came up. And Republican former Senator Steve Urquhart ran it a few years. It faced some resistance, ran over some rocks and didn't go anywhere. And then Senator Daniel Thatcher picked it up, I think, in 2017. Didn't even get a committee hearing. And then this year, the LDS Church says, hey, we don't oppose this. We're not going to oppose this. And that seemed to give it a little more momentum. So it passed the Senate this week, the full Senate. So it's not in the home stretch yet. It will still have to go through the full House. Time's running out, as we've been talking about.
But if you're wondering the difference between what happened with conversion therapy and what happened with hate crimes, both of which are supported by LGBTQ groups, mm-hmm. Hate crimes has just had a lot more vetting and a lot more discussion.
Years of vetting and discussion.
And I do think that that is an important part of the Utah legislature's overall process. Mm-hmm. You may not like it, but...
And we also talked a week or two ago about how headlines can influence legislation. And we saw, I think, the hate crimes bill got a boost because this Hispanic family was targeted, mm-hmm. and they couldn't have been charged under the state's hate crime statute. So that may have also helped give it a boost. This year, conversion therapy may have to be one of those things that comes up a few times before it gets through both chambers.
So we should end on one more bill that doesn't appear to be happening. I know we have a lot of bad news this week for people who might like these bills, but this is the beer bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
We talked to the beer lobbyist a couple weeks ago about this effort to raise the cap on grocery store beer from 3.2% to 4.8%. I don't even know because I've moved around so much that I don't have these things memorized like you do. So tell us what happened, Nicole.
So this bill seemed to have a lot of momentum from the very beginning. It's run by Senator Jerry Stevenson, who's this very longtime, wise, powerful senator. He's the Senate chair of the Budget Committee.
He controls the purse.
He does. And he's the point person for alcohol legislation on the Hill. So he's known that this has been an issue for several years, and this year he said, I'm going to do this. He ran the bill. It sailed through the Senate, sort of, got to the House, and totally hit the brakes.
Yeah, it kind of went off the rails a little bit.
Totally. So the House Rules Committee Chairman, Tim mm-hmm. Hawks, is not a fan of this bill, and he made that pretty clear from the beginning. He gets to decide which committee this bill would be heard in. So instead of sending it to the House Business and Labor Committee, he sent it to the House Health and Human Services Committee. And that sent a pretty strong signal to Senator Stevenson that this bill was in peril from the beginning in this committee. So he went to the committee and he said, I know this is going to be a hostile committee to this bill. I'm fine just killing it if you guys want to do that. They went through the whole process. What they ended up doing is gutting the bill and keeping the limit at 3.2% in stores and creating a task force.
Did you say task force?
A task force. This is like our third task force this year.
I know.
So they instead created a task force to study whether it's necessary to raise the limit on beer sold in grocery and convenience stores.
This led to sort of a remarkable moment this week in the House GOP caucus, which I was sitting in. Mm-hmm. Representative Hawks, the chair of that rules committee, created this very detailed PowerPoint presentation detailing why he thought it was appropriate to send the bill to Health and Human Services because he had been getting some pushback and the public had been writing in about this. And the dangers of raising the alcohol cap could pose to public health. So he had like slides and pictures of car crashes and DUI related imagery, pickled livers, things like
Ooh.
That. It was very graphic. And then he started to rally some of the other members mm-hmm. of the caucus around the fact that like we are Utah, we have a unique culture. People call our alcohol laws weird, but they protect public safety, and we have one of the lowest DUI rates and DUI crashes in the country. And it sort of went on and on and on, but it sent this really strong signal to all the media in the room that perhaps this bill will not be continuing in its current form.
Yeah. And the question now is, do they move it along in the task force form, or do they just kill it and keep it as it is now at 3.2 with no changes?
Yeah, he seemed to lobby for having senators and representatives study the issue more. Mm-hmm. He says, I don't see a crisis right now of stores running out of beer, so let's study it. And we know how
well
much...
when I asked Senator Stevenson about what he thought of the task force, he says he called task forces and study committees Never, Never Land. he was not a fan of studying the issue. He says, I've studied this for years, and I think 4.8 is the right move. And this just shows how, you know, we have Republicans and Democrats in the legislature, and we have a spectrum of the Republican mm-hmm. Party in the legislature. But this one shows a big difference between the House and yes. the Senate, which is another big divide that we sometimes don't talk about.
Yeah, and we should also note that most of the members of the Republican caucus are members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day yeah. Saints. They do not drink, and they'd like to keep it that way. They yeah. like to keep Utah's laws reflective of the culture mm-hmm. that they've grown up in. So,
I have a great quote from Senator Stevenson, who said he doesn't drink beer.
You know, this is very interesting. I don't drink beer, and yet I get the blessings and the blame and the, you know, all the stuff that comes with it. So
Nicole, we've been talking about a lot of issues this week, but there are some that we have not even had time to cover this session on our podcast.
Very busy session.
Yeah, and that includes affordable housing and homelessness. Luckily, we caught up with someone who has been paying attention to those issues, and we'll talk to her in just a second.
Yay.
KUER is proud to be a public radio station. Serving you is our first priority. We deliver news, stories, and conversation that are independent, calm, and commercial-free. We are also listener-supported. We depend on you for financial support. Become one of more than 9,000 sustainers who make a monthly contribution, starting at just $5 a month. If you heard something on KUER recently that made a difference to you, go to KUER.org today and click donate, and thanks.
So, Julia, we haven't talked a lot about homelessness this year.
But that's because lawmakers haven't been talking about it either.
Yeah, there are, however, some bills dealing with affordable housing this year, which has been a pressing issue for some time. So I got together with Deseret News journalist Katie McKellar. She's been covering affordable housing and homelessness and all of that drama for some time, and she's stationed at the Capitol this year for the legislative session. So homelessness has been a top priority for a few years now at the legislature since Operation Rio Grande started. But this year there seems to be more of a serious emphasis on affordable housing. So tell us what lawmakers want to do there.
Right. So the biggest bill right now is Senator Andrick's affordable housing bill. It would leverage state transportation dollars to encourage more cities to pave the way for affordable housing. How it does that is it requires cities, if they want to be eligible for state TIF dollars or a fund of about $700 million state transportation dollars they can apply for. Most cities will need to fulfill at least three requirements to encourage affordable housing in their cities. Those options range from like rezoning to higher density housing or allowing accessory dwelling units or mother-in-law apartments.
So it has all these things that cities can pick from. There was a proposal last year, if I remember correctly, where cities would have to do some of these things or they would have to pay toward affordable housing. And that didn't go anywhere. And, you know, there was a lot of pushback from these more suburban cities right. saying, we don't want higher density housing. So how is this any different?
Well, so this one kind of, it's more what Andrick says is feels more like a carrot, and it's a big enough carrot, it feels like a stick. So it's kind of putting it on the cities to decide to do this if they want to apply for these state transportation dollars.
And they have more to choose from, it sounds like, too?
Oh, yeah. There's a list of about 20 options.
Okay. So $24 million and an apartment or housing shortage of about 40,000 units. Is $24 million enough to solve the problem, or is this like the first step in many years to come?
Right. That's the question, is how much money can they throw at this? And others kind of see this as more of a market issue. The housing market's going to have to figure itself out. The argument on this bill is cities need to play a part in that to help solve the problem. There's also really big players behind this bill, like the Salt Lake Chamber and Ivory Homes, big developers, kind of saying cities need to help us help solve the problem, help developers solve the problem. So that's the thought behind this bill.
Okay, so we've seen a few audits of the road home and the state's homeless system recently. So tell us about those and how lawmakers are responding to them.
Right. So there's a couple bills that I've written about. One is the homeless drug-free zone that Representative Elison is running. It would create a drug-free zone around homeless shelters, like how there are drug-free zones around schools and churches. This is kind of stemming from the audit that found drugs in the Road Homes downtown shelter, and also what we saw before Operation Rio Grande, lots of drug dealing and crime around the downtown shelter. And this bill would put higher penalties on drug dealing, not possession, but drug dealing around homeless shelters and inside the shelters. This is kind of aimed at trying to avoid what we saw in the Rio Grande when these new homeless resource centers open in Salt Lake City and South Salt Lake. And so the penalty right now is a Class B misdemeanor. This bill would make it go up to a Class A. There's been some pushback saying we are worried that this bill would just kind of capture more people seeking services, but the aim is drug dealing to, you know, help people looking for services at these homeless resource centers.
And then there was another audit where the state basically found that we spent all this money to combat homelessness and we're not sure if it's actually working. So what's the deal with that?
Right. So there's another bill. Representative Brian King and Senator Anderegg are running to address another homeless audit of the entire state system last year that found poor data affecting the state's ability to track its own performance as it relates to homelessness. It's a big deal because auditors estimate Utah spent more than $100 million in 2017 on direct and indirect costs associated with homelessness, and yet they couldn't determine whether those multi-million dollar efforts are working due to problems with data. So this bill would require the state's Homeless Coordinating Committee, which is a body that basically controls state money, how it gets distributed to homeless providers, to implement new requirements for evaluating and reporting on progress towards specific goals. So the aim is to hold that state Homeless Coordinating Committee more accountable so it can start producing data to track which programs work and which ones don't.
Got it. So the Road Home was scheduled to close this summer. Sounds like that might not happen. So what's the timeline for that and these three new shelters that we're supposed to have opening?
Right. So there's three homeless shelters currently under construction, two in Salt Lake City. Those are on track roughly to open around July. But the biggest shelter, the 300-bed men's shelter in South Salt Lake that ran into permitting problems with the city, it's behind schedule and isn't slated to be completed until like maybe September, early September or late August is their estimate. That means the Road Home will not close by that June 30th state mandated deadline, but they're pushing now towards September to close it.
Got it. So we're seeing movement now with this Anderegg bill. Is affordable housing going to be an issue in the legislature for many years to come?
Well, Anderegg did hint that because some of the pushback on this bill is it's not strong enough, why do it anyway? They've got the state homeless commission that he's sitting on to try to address this housing crunch along the Wasatch Front. He says this bill is a first step. So during the session, I don't know what we'll see in coming years, but if the housing market continues to be difficult and people continue to get priced out, we could see some more bills putting more pressure on cities, more incentives on developers to create moderate income housing. And it doesn't just affect people who are homeless, but you know, people with normal salaries who can't afford $1,000 or $1,600 rents or mortgages. So we'll see in coming years, but that's what's happening this year.
Katie McKellar is a political reporter with the Deseret News. Thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you.
Hi, it's Nicole Nixon from 45 Days. Every week, Julia Ritchie and I break down the latest news and bills coming out of the Utah legislative session. If you enjoy the podcast, you should sign up for the 45 Days newsletter. It's like our show, except it's an email and you read it. Let us send you email. Sign up at 45days.org.
Listen closely to the floor debate this session, and you might have picked up on a theme.
Including a description of command systems such as socialism and communism.
Philosophies that lead us there, such as socialism.
Of the rising generation's fascination with socialism.
Many that are openly advocating that we need to move more toward socialism and communism.
That's right. The specter of socialism is haunting the Utah legislature this year. Ooh.
And I did a story on it this week. I was noticing the word socialism becoming this kind of buzzword that Republicans were using this session. Obviously, Congressman Chris Stewart of Utah's 2nd Congressional District made some headlines last month when he formed his anti-socialism caucus in the House.
But even before that, Governor Gary Herbert surprised some people when he threw in the S word during his State of the State speech.
But frankly, I have been disturbed by some of the rising generation's fascination with socialism. What we see in Venezuela should remind us that tyranny and poverty follow economic systems where the state controls production, where bureaucrats allocate resources, and where government picks the winners and the losers.
And some Republican lawmakers have embraced the talking point, as I mentioned, with a series of bills that sort of poke at socialism, some of them subtly, some of them more overtly.
There's an update to the state of Utah's financial literacy course that would require high school students to learn about not only taxes and how to write checks and balance your checkbooks, as I learned, but the differences between capitalism and socialism and communism, as well as historical examples.
And then there's the Victims of Communism Memorial Day, which is fairly innocuous. It was something started by President Trump in 2017, designates November 7th. As Victims of Communism Memorial Day. But now a bunch of red states are putting it in their statutes thanks to model legislation by the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is a pretty influential group of conservative state lawmakers.
And the lawmaker running that one even said in his testimony that he hopes educating the public about communism will keep Utahns from embracing philosophies that lead to it, i.e. socialism.
Yeah, so this is not exactly a new scare tactic at all. It's a very real reaction, however, to some political forces that are reshaping both of the major parties.
Right. Obviously, the right has been pretty obsessed lately with self-described Democratic Socialist Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. That was a mouthful. Ever since her victory in her New York primary last summer.
And to his credit, ever since Bernie Sanders' insurgent run for president in 2016, he and other activists have been able to push the party to the left on a lot of issues like Medicare for All, universal pre-K, and like student loan forgiveness.
But Julia, aren't those things socialism?
Well, Nicole, if you ask some Republicans at the legislature, yes, that seems to be their very broad definition of socialism, which has become shorthand for any expansion of the government's social safety net. A more nuanced portrayal of what's happening is a debate over the future of our country's welfare and healthcare programs. That includes things like Social Security and Medicare.
Well, despite a booming economy, there are still a lot of folks left behind. And some Democratic presidential hopefuls are proposing solutions that would involve raising taxes on the rich and expanding existing government programs like Medicare.
I talked with Utah's House Minority Leader Brian King this week about the chiding from his colleagues and what he thinks about all of this socialism talk, and he listed a number of things that he wants his Republican colleagues to remember that are actually quite socialistic.
The reality is we have a mixed economy, and anybody who understands the economic and political systems recognizes that it's true that there are many, many things that we take for granted or that are wonderful that we live with every day and we wouldn't do without that are purely socialistic. I mean, our water system, our sewer systems, our firefighters, our police officers, over and over and over again, our public school system, our highways, interstate systems.
Will this work, do you think?
It's tough to say. There was a new poll that came out this week from NBC News and the Wall Street Journal that showed only 1 in 5 Americans have a positive reaction to the word socialism, much higher for capitalism, obviously, which is our predominant system. So that is in the Republicans' favor to continue to press that point. However, that same poll showed more than half think the government should do more to help them in their lives, including things like keeping healthcare costs low, et cetera.
Americans don't know what they want.
Yeah, I know. So that's kind of that sounds about right, right?
I saw this great CNBC headline that said, "American public, keep your socialist hands off my government program."
Mixed signals. It's what we're good at, right, as Americans?
Yes.
45 Days is a production of KUER News. This episode was produced by Roddy Nickpour with original music by David Whited.
Be sure to subscribe to our newsletter that goes out every Monday morning. To do that and to find more local news and legislative coverage, visit our website at KUER.org.
And if you have a bill or an issue that you've been dying for us to cover, let us know before next week.
Yeah, next week is our last episode of the session, and we love hearing from you.
Yes. So you can always drop us a line on social media. On Twitter, I'm @JuliaRitchie.
And I am @_Nixo.
See you next week.